Hello guys, this is Clint Locklear with Man Strong Podcast, and I'm with Kevin, which we're getting ready to introduce. And before we get into the show, I want to thank our sponsor, which is Funky Trap Tags and Supply out of Iowa. Alan is a good friend of mine, and he is also a member of the Trapping Radio Fur Brigade, where you get 10% off. He's going to be at the FTA in Virginia this year, and he's going directly from that from PA. So if you need anything, let him know, and he can bring it, and you can still use your discount. So that's our sponsor, Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. There's going to be a little bit of noise. I'm in Mississippi. The air conditioned, we're in the RV, and we're not turning the air off. So we're just going to have to live with a little bit of background noise. So Kevin, why don't you introduce yourself, where you're from, and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I'm Kevin Wilson. I'm born and raised on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi. I'm retired from the Army. I spent 18 and a half years in the Navy. I was a warrant officer, and things just didn't work out, so I separated from that. I opened an air conditioning business, which has been very successful through most of my adult life, and I had an opportunity to rejoin the service, which we'll talk about later, and get my retirement. So now I'm just down here. Fish and work.
Fish and work. Well, you know, the way we met is you sent me some bobbers in the mail, and because you were watching some of my stuff on YouTube, and you were saying, because I was having trouble with the wind messing all my flags up, and you sent that, and I appreciate that for the cats, but I knew I was coming to Louisiana, and I'm like, okay, how do I use these to catch trout?
Right.
And that's when I found out you're an avid trout fisherman.
Exactly. About 5 years ago, I was having trouble with a popping cork that we use in the inshore saltwater on the Gulf Coast to catch speckled trout, redfish, and those kind of species. And I redesigned it and got a patent on it. And it's a pretty neat cork. And I've been watching your YouTube videos, and you know, I'm doing a lot of research. I'm a beginning trapper, almost 60, so I guess I'm getting a late start, but that's okay. And but when you told me you were coming down this way, I thought, well, man, wouldn't that be neat? I could get to meet Clint and his wife, and I could take them fishing and show them a little bit of the Gulf Coast culture and a little bit of how to use the gear that you use down here to catch fish, because you guys were going on vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a chance to take you guys fishing, spend a couple days, and it was awesome. I mean, we didn't exactly destroy the fish, but we had a great time.
Well, I thought we did pretty good. It's much better when I go to the, if I go to the ocean by myself, I normally catch enough just to make it worth my time, but it's normally not all that great.
I think we ended up with 6 bags of fillets the first day, and then we got a chance to go red snapper fishing. Mm-hmm. And the snapper were still a little small. It's early in the season, but we got to see some blue water and got to do some fishing. Had a good time, used some different gear, some different tactics, and got a little sunburnt, and yeah.
So before we get into the topic, because have you ever listened to Man Strong Podcast?
I never have been able to get to it yet, but like I said, I'm new, so I'm learning.
Okay, so this is not really a trapping type thing. This is something, for me personally, I just keep looking around the world, and I keep seeing men, masculinity are made fun of, and
right.
It's like the manliness that we grew up with is disappearing into just a bunch of feminine guys.
Exactly. It's turning into a political correctness society, I think, is what we're saying.
Yeah, so that's kind of what this is. So when you told me about your son in the military, that's
absolutely
what tripped my trip, because I've never interviewed anybody for this podcast. But that was really cool. But most guys that listen to this at this stage are trappers. So I should ask you this before we got started.
Right.
The Teflon nylon that you're using for the leaders inside of your corks, the stuff that won't twist up.
Right. Titanium.
Titanium.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something they can find? Do they need to get that from you?
It's difficult to find, and me being a tackle manufacturer, I can probably get it a lot cheaper. I'll be honest, I buy it in 9-inch lengths, and I have to buy 1,000 piece minimum, and so it's normally, my cost is normally about $400. And I don't have a problem passing it on at cost or whatever, plus shipping. So, I mean, if guys want it, once, if you ever get to use it and people get to see the flags and it works, which I think it will, because titanium is so strong, small, and flexible, and we're able to reintroduce the swivels. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be a plus. I hope it will.
Now, how are you putting the swivels on? Would they need a crimping machine?
I crimp them. It's just a regular pair of hand crimpers. It's nothing to it, and pretty much you just crimp the center of the swivel, and then you just smash it, and they'll pretty much hold up forever. So,
well, maybe if you ever decide to, you know, like put 12 in a bag that's already got the ends on there, might be able to sell them to trappers.
I'm just figuring out what the cost is on them. It's not, like I said, I'm semi-retired, so I don't have a problem with doing that. I do it with a lot of things. So.
Yeah, like maybe I can hook you up with Funky Allen.
Okay, sure.
And that way you could send to him, he could send you money, and you don't have to worry about mail work.
Sure, that's great. Oh, I know. I've been there with the courts, and that's why the court never, you don't see them a lot, because I give a lot more. I probably give away 1,000 a year.
You gave a bunch to me.
Well, I sponsor several charter captains, and they sponsor kids events at the boat shows, and thank goodness we're having big turnouts, and it's getting better each year. And Academy Sports is involved. They donate a bunch of rod and reels and tackle boxes. Plano's involved. Some of the lure manufacturers involved, and then I get involved and I donate corks. And we have demos, you know, we demo everything from casting. We have a research lab come and go over all the different fish and how they're raised and, you know, their life cycles and all that stuff. So it's a big educational, but a fun thing too. So yeah, we're having a great time. But yeah, I'd be glad to hook up with these guys and do whatever we need to do.
Do you sell a lot through the mail? I mean,
I hardly sell any, believe it or not. It's just more of a hobby than anything else.
I need to hook you up with Alan.
Okay.
I mean, it's just what he's good at. You can just ship them to him. He handles everything for a small thing. He ships all my stuff now.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, I saw that with the trailer when he started doing that for you. Yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah, great
guy. Freed me up, you know. And so, yeah, we can talk about that after the show. So,
okay.
you said that this is what prompted me to want to do the podcast.
Right.
You and your son were in the same Humvee in combat in Afghanistan.
In Iraq.
In Iraq.
Yes.
And you said the phrase you used is you got to see your son be a man.
Exactly. Absolutely. It's probably one of the greatest honors I think that any father could ever have, to watch his son as a man in that situation is kind of extreme. But I'm sure a lot of men see this in their daily walks of life. They see their children grow into adults. But I think sometimes we overlook actually seeing them as a standalone, grown-up man.
Mm-hmm.
My son's very much like me because, of course, he was raised by me, and he worked with me from the time he was 13 in the air conditioning business. And then he joined the National Guard. Well, I was out of the Navy, and I didn't know this, but at the time, they took your active service and subtracted it from your age. I was 45, and I was eligible to go back in the Army, so I joined the Mississippi National Guard. And I was activated the same day I joined, so my time was all active duty. But it was the same unit my son was in. Well, we deployed to Iraq, and I was a gunner on a Humvee, and he was a driver. So we ended up together a lot in combat situations. And I mean, Iraq wasn't really a giant firefight. I mean, we got hit by IEDs, and we ended up in some tent situations. But you get to see him as a leader.
Mm-hmm. And
you get to see him as you get to see courage, and you get to see pride. You get to see the things that you probably wouldn't get to see in a normal day-to-day thing. You get to, you know, and you're kind of confined because you're under a microscope. You're so small, you know, because you're right there all the time.
Well, I was an infantry. Only person that ever drove in a Humvee was a lieutenant because he's too lazy to walk. So how many guys are in an active Humvee unit that's working?
In each Humvee, there's five people. there's a driver, a vehicle commander. They're both in the front seats. The vehicle commander is, he's generally running the communications, and he's generally doing any kind of navigation or whatever has to happen. And he's pretty much, he's in charge more or less. You have a gunner that's in the center of the Humvee, he's up on top. So he's pretty much he's the eyes outside, and he pretty much engages if he has to on his own, or he can be directed by the commander. The vehicle commander. And then in the back seat you have two infantrymen that are what they call dismounts. So in other words, if you run into an issue where you need to do actual combat infantry stuff, then those guys dismount, and there's normally three or four Humvees, so you have six or eight of those, and then the vehicle.
So it's like a small squad.
Right, it is. That's what it is. And then the vehicle commanders can dismount, because now you've got your driver that's not driving, and you've got your gunner providing overwatch or suppressive fire if he needs to, and your driver's generally running your communications. So he's, you know what I'm saying, a lot of communication, you know.
So in this, I know this is technical, I'm just curious. So in that situation, y'all get rid of an RTO like we had in a regular line unit.
Right.
You don't have a radio guy for the squad. No, right. Every Humvee.
Have.
That's interesting.
Right.
Okay.
And we were pretty, you know, most everybody was pretty proficient with radios. I mean, with communications, because that's your lifeline. You know, that's everything. If you don't want to, the worst feeling in the world is to feel alone in a place that you're not from or familiar with, especially when there's people that don't want you.
What are you talking about? Iraq looks just like Biloxi, Mississippi,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, it does on a bad day, right after Katrina, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, I have to admit, though, I mean, the people in Iraq were just like anybody else. You know, they just want to live their life and do what they do and raise families and that kind of stuff. And that's one thing I saw from the National Guard, and I'm not... We're professional soldiers, but we also have professional lives outside of that. So they take kind of a different look at it. And don't get me wrong, I have all respect in the world for the regular Army guys. The guys do this day in and day out. I mean, they're true professional soldiers. I mean, they're the best on this planet. And I tell you, I have so much respect for them. And I say this all the time. And my son is one of these people that I'm talking about.
Daniel, you care if we use his name?
My son's name is Daniel.
Okay.
Yeah,
that way.
My son's name is Daniel, and he's now 37. But I have been fortunate in my entire military career that I was very successful, but I enjoyed what I did. But I'm really just a small little person. I have had the opportunity to stand in the shadow of giants. I'm talking about men that were just, to me, were just giants. I mean, they had courage. They had, they were level-headed in bad situations. And I mean, and I got to experience that with all the services, because we operated with the Air Force, the Navy, the Marine Corps. You know, even some Coast Guard guys. I mean, so I feel that's very important. And believe it or not, those guys are out there. They're everywhere.
Sure, sure. Yeah. It's just, they seem to congregate.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Those type, you know, because, you know, when I was in the Army, and we would see Air Force, and they were always like pretty boys.
Right.
But when we were in Iraq, they were running sorties out of King Fahd Airport every 2 minutes, 24 hours a day for months. And we had to go pull security a few times. And those guys looked like one day away from being in a real Walking Dead episode.
Right.
I mean, because they're running off 3 hours sleep for months.
Right.
And this, I was like, I mean, I had a new respect.
Exactly. For the other services. Wow. A good example, we stepped in. We took over in the rotation for the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force, where we were at. We were down in the Delta between the Tigris and Euphrates River, which was a pretty
hot. That's where we got on the first war. I was right there.
It was pretty hot down there where we were at, and we were there the year of the elections, the first elections they had ever had. And so it was a real contentious time within the country. You had a lot of different factions. You had they hadn't really formed a real good government yet, and but the 2nd Marine Expeditionary Force had literally gone from 2 operating bases, 6 miles, and took 12 casualties. And I, to put that in perspective, those guys generally don't even have a wounded in 6 miles in a pretty heavy conflict. So for them to have to go through that, I mean, that's what I'm talking about, giants. I mean, you know, those are Marines, and yeah, they're the hardcore guys. But we had Air Force guys that were flying out of Baghdad, and of course our dog handlers were Air Force guys, our bomb sniffers, and they are also security also. And we found out that the insurgents really didn't like that. They didn't like the German Shepherds. They weren't afraid of a whole lot, but a German Shepherd they didn't like. So those guys were a real key asset to us.
So your EOD was Air Force.
Mm-hmm. And then we had an EOD force that did all of our bomb disposal and all that, because we found a lot of IEDs, a lot of unexploded ordnance. And a funny story is we found out that what the little rascals were doing was they were putting the dummies, and then our EOD would blow them a nice hole to hide them in. Hide the real ones in. So yeah, that was pretty good. But we had Navy guys. Of course, we lived on a Ford.
Because the ground is hard.
Right. That's right. The ground is, I mean, it's hard as a brick. And so yeah, we blew them a nice big hole right on the side of the road. I mean, they marked the spot, and we blew them the hole. It was pretty cool. So. But where we lived on a forward operating base, it hadn't been established for a long period of time, and we still lived in tents. And believe it or not, they had air conditioners on them, which that fell kind of into my and Daniel's wheelhouse, because we knew how to work on air conditioners, which came in real handy. But the Navy, the CBs were there, and of course they maintained all the perimeters and all that stuff, and they also did all the maintenance type work there. So they were a key asset. And
we weren't that integrated. I mean, we didn't.
Yeah, we were very integrated. And wow. and we, so I, like I said, I've been around guys that I don't even think I hold a candle to. I really don't. I mean, and some of the leaders that taught me were some of the greatest men I've ever been around. I mean, I had some, they taught me skills that you would never achieve otherwise than to learn them from somebody like that. So, I mean,
Well, when you think about these great men, like when I think about some of the guys that I've been around, we had a first sergeant that actually was from Vietnam, and we got artillery, and watching him while that was going on was more lessening in leadership than I would have ever got from any class.
Right.
or you know, like when I hear people, they take leadership in college, I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but yeah. see him, how he, you know, right. Making, you know, playing mama hen the way they do with a big stick.
That's right. But they're fluid.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that I noticed was calm.
Exactly.
You know, he would raise his voice, but it was...
That's right.
And to me, I think that's one of the biggest things of a mature male is when things get crazy, that's part of their role is to level out and calm.
Well, you know, it's level-headedness, and it's it makes everything around it stable.
Yes.
Okay. And like we said, those guys are fluid. They're doing so many things at one time, and they don't even think about it. It's just that's what they do. And we had a great first sergeant. As an infantryman, that was very important. We had a very supportive, intelligent, even-handed first sergeant. And that was one of the things that I learned, and Daniel picked it up too, because I see it in him a lot. Is that these guys really knew how to treat people. You know, as a man, I think that's so important, that you treat people with respect, and you give respect, and you treat people with kindness, because, you know, there's a lot more to this in the military. The military, you serve your country, and you're in a very unique group, because there's so few, that if you look at the demographics, there's very, very few Americans that that have the opportunity to serve. And I think that's a choice, and it should be that way. But I look at it like that person that's behind the counter at McDonald's is serving just as much as anybody else, and they need that respect because it takes everybody to make it go around.
It sure
if you're
does.
Contributing to society and you're providing a service, then you're serving. You know, and I think we've overlooked that. You know, so many people, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and they all want to get whatever they want. But they need to understand, you know, I know you and I and my son and most of the people I associate with, we all make sacrifices for our family, for our country, for God, for our job. You know, we all make sacrifices because when I'm working, I would much rather be playing.
Sure.
But that's not what it's all about. You know, as men, we have to stand our ground, and we have but at the same time, we need to be even-handed and considerate.
Well, the thing that I watched was the first sergeant was probably one of the most level-headed, mature, could be the most fierce dude you'd ever be up against.
Exactly.
You know, If you willingly did something that he knew, most time it was absent mindedness he wouldn't put up with,
right,
or just being weak and stuff like that. We had a guy shoot his foot. We were 2 days of going in to Iraq. He got really scared.
Mm-hmm.
He got an M16 and a 45. And to him, the 45 looked smaller. So he shot himself in the foot with a 45. And he's screaming.
Oh, yeah.
And the first sergeant comes over, never got excited, never did anything. And before he called the paramedics, where everybody could hear, he was, well, I can't use all the language he used, but he was actually really calm and going, you don't use the big bullet to shoot yourself. You use the small bullet to shoot yourself. And then he called the paramedics. But to me, that was if someone's wanting to do that in that situation, then they need to suffer a little bit.
Right.
I mean, that was kind of the...
Exactly.
It was interesting to watch.
Now, that's something else I got to see with my son, which is, like I said, I've been blessed with the opportunities I've had. And that really was an opportunity that... it was the highlight of my life, actually. And I couldn't be prouder of my son as a man. But you get to see, you know, him do those kind of things, you know, because I saw people just literally fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people talk about bravery, you know, a lot. They talk about how brave a guy is. My experience with bravery is you're so afraid of the situation that's happening that your feet won't move. So you have no choice but to fight back. So it's kind of that way, but my son is he has a lot of courage, and I got to see that.
And I can tell he's a thinker, and he's very level-headed.
Right, and he's a character. My son is a character. He loves to have a good time, and I mean that in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
He likes to joke around, and he's never met a stranger, and a lot of that is the experience that we spent together, you know. And that, you know, that's something else I'm seeing now a little more of is I'm very fortunate that I have a daughter also. Her name is Leslie, and my son-in-law, I mean, you couldn't buy one better. I mean, my son-in-law, he takes care of his family, he takes care of his business, and he's on it. But he's a nice guy, you know what I'm saying? But he's very responsible. But I'm kind of seeing this trend now where folks are not paying attention. They're falling asleep at the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, young people are in a tough spot right now. We've got a society that is changing almost daily.
Sure.
And the politics is just absolutely, it's off the board somewhere. I don't even know where it is. And now, more than any time, we need to hold them close. We need to hold them close. We need to show them the way. And yeah, they know everything and they're not going to listen to us. But when they get to be 25 and they're sitting in the driver's seat of a Humvee, they know some things.
Well, you said he was working with you when he was 13.
That's right.
See, to me, that's one of the biggest differences of what helps a young man become a man is to be with his dad.
Okay.
In a lot of jobs, you can't do that.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and it's unfortunate. You know, and then, you know, it seems like today, go watch TV, go play your video games, we're going to take you and drop you off at sports. Yeah, on that phone.
On that phone.
You know, stuff like that, where, you know, our generation, a lot of we're going fishing,
that's
we're
right.
going to ride horses, we're going to, you know, go cut hay, we're
right.
going to do. But it was, the son and dad was always together.
That's right.
And now it's kind of like, how was your day? That's good, I'll see you tomorrow.
Right. Well, too, then I remember when we had party lines on the landline phone. That was the first thing. Everybody in the neighborhood could hear what you were chatting about, so you had to be real careful if you were up to something. And then that went away, and you had regular landlines. So if you wanted to talk to somebody, you had to make an effort to actually talk to them. But most of our interaction was face-to-face, which I enjoy more than anything else, mm-hmm. is having face-to-face interaction. But now that's being kind of phased out by technology.
Yeah.
And it's not anybody's fault. It just is technology is taking us that way. But us as men need to kind of take some of that back. In other words, we need to talk to our children. We need to know what they're doing. We need to scold them when they're wrong. And we need, but even more than that, though, we need to give them a pat on the back when they're right. You know, we need to support them. Let them know they're doing good, or they did good, or you're proud of them, or you love them. I mean, I'll be 60 years old in a couple of months. My son's 37. And I talk to him 3 or 4 times a week, and we each, without fail, we tell each other we love her, you know, love each other when we talk to her, because to each other, because that bond is irreplaceable,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, and he still calls me for advice, you know, and I still get on him when he's wrong.
Well, the thing about parents is they get really smart when you're about 28 or 30.
Yeah. 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 That's about right. And in my case, I was about 50 when I got a little bit of wisdom. So, and it's starting to creep in now. But yeah, my son is an incredible man. He is. He really is. And
how did y'all handle? How did you handle as a dad with your son being an arm length away?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would think that there would be an overly protection.
No, we never had that issue, because in that situation we looked at each other as men, soldiers. In other words, so the professional soldier side took care of that, and it was kind of neat. I kind of got my revenge.
Now, who outranked who?
Oh, outranked him.
Okay. But, yeah. that would have been awkward.
Thank goodness. Well, yeah. But it was kind of neat. I got my revenge for some of his childhood pranks. Is that the gunner, the way he communicates with the driver is he kicks him in the head.
Mm.
So, yeah, so that was pretty cool. You know, we'd be driving along and I'd see something that I shouldn't be seeing, or he needed to stop, you know, right away. And I get to thump him in the head. So, yeah. He took it pretty good, though.
Well, there still had to be some ribbon going back.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's always some ribbon about something, you know, because later in the tour, we had the internet. You know, we were able to communicate with home pretty much daily if we wanted to. Now, of course, we spent a lot of time outside, you know, running patrols and doing the things we were there to be doing. And so he didn't have access. But when we did have it, of course, he had girlfriends. He wasn't married at the time. He had girlfriends and all that stuff. So I'm constantly on him, you know, about something, you know. And you kind of keep it light, you know, when you're in those kind of intense situations, humor kind of is kind of the that's the word of the day.
Well, the thing about military humor is one females never understand,
right.
Because we can get dark,
oh, absolutely.
And dirty,
right.
and go to some weird places and make other people. But that's the only way, because I talked to Travis about that before. The way that we talk to each other in the military in stressful or after stressful situation.
That's right.
The joking around, even though it was brutal, was the only way we knew how to cope.
Exactly. Because, well, you're all in it together, and some of the things you're dealing with are just absolute, or things that nobody should have to see or deal with. Okay. And most Americans, because we have such a deep respect for life and our way of life, the things that you see are just absolutely horrifying, would be to a normal person. And so, yeah, you have to break it somehow. And yeah, and we do get deep, and we take what would be really, most people would say were very inappropriate situations, and we make light of it.
Yeah.
But that's how you get to the next one, because you don't have the opportunity to grieve or you know, get too deep off into something, because you've got to be ready for whatever's next. And it may never come, but you got to be ready just in case it comes, you know. So yeah, that's one of those things. And but there was several situations. One, the IED he and I got hit with, they had used a trigger that was in the road. It was like a pressure switch. And he saw it at the very last minute. It was at night, and we weren't running with lights, so he was looking through MVG's night vision goggles, and he saw it, and he swerved real hard. And I kicked him in the head, and the bomb went off.
Mm.
So it disabled the Humvee, and it was pretty stressful at that point, because now you don't know what comes next. And fortunately, in that situation, nothing came next, but, you know, we did our thing. And another one, he and I, let's see, where were we at? We got in all kinds of little trouble together. Oh, we were trying to, every day we got a list, a BOLO list of people that we were supposed to go out and visit, or, you know, or make contact with, or bring them back for questioning or whatever. So we were out doing that one day, and there was a school next to these houses, and supposedly this guy was in a house. There was two of them. They were supposed to be in this house. So they raided the house. Well, because of the way the streets were set up, they spread us out to set up security. Well, of course, I'm up on the gun mount, and we're on the outside of the school, so we're away from the rest of the group. And I just happened to see some people in the school on the third floor going down in the windows. And I told him, well, one of them came and stuck his head out of the window. It was one of the guys.
Mm.
So I told Daniel, I said, well, there's one of them right there. So he hands me the radio, and he bails out of the Humvee, goes in there and arrests these guys, zip ties them while I'm covering the thing. It was pretty neat. That's what I mean about getting to see him be a man. You know, he didn't even think about it. He just did his job, and that's what he did.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
Have you ever heard? I've never heard of a son and father.
We actually had another set.
Really?
We had two sets. They were in the motor pool, so they weren't out running patrols. And but now the son, he ran patrols with us quite a bit. I think he's doing quite well in the military now. He went active duty after that, and
so maybe it's more common in the Guard.
It is very common in the Guard. A lot of folks don't realize that it's even acceptable. Now, in the regular Army, or any of the regular, and when I say regular, I'm talking about active duty. That they don't allow that to happen. I think in a few cases they'll put spouses together, but not in combat. But in the National Guard, if you're in that company,
and
you're both infantrymen, that's perfectly acceptable while you're here in the States. I mean, because the Guard's duty is really like natural disasters or security or whatever. They, you know, we're pretty much, we work for the governor.
Mm-hmm.
But once you go active, then you work for the federal government, and but you're in the Guard, so they don't distinguish all that. So yeah, there are probably a lot more out there than people realize. With all the stuff we've had going on, most of the National Guards have been activated at some point, you know, some of them multiple times. So yeah, I don't know of any other combat father and son, but I know of other father and son that have been in war places.
How did your wife handle that?
Well, actually, she handled it pretty well. She was concerned, of course, because we were where we were and doing what we were doing, but she was less concerned because we were together.
Because y'all could watch each other's back.
That's right. So there's a little extra added there. Now, honestly, I didn't need to. My son is a good soldier. He is a top-notch, sure enough soldier. I mean, he's a Bradley tank commander. He's a fighting vehicle commander. He's a gunner on Bradley's. He does all that kind of stuff outside of that. He's an expert marksman. And he covered all bases. So, because we were together, and my feeling was, a lot of people said, well, man, how do you handle that, you know, being right there with your son? I said, well, what if something happened? You know, and that's a big question. Well, the answer is, I could be 2,500 miles away when it happens, or I could be right there. Mm-hmm. Not going to change the situation, but I may have some control over it if I'm right there.
Right. I can see that.
So it's a little, actually, believe it or not, it's a little more comforting, you know, because I had all the experience in the Navy, and I was pretty senior enlisted, and I took a commission, and so, I mean, I had been, you know, on board a lot of warships and some pretty, you know, hostile environments, so we were out on the water, so I'm not going to say we were, you know what I'm saying, it's a lot easier when you're 16 miles away than...
You know, I was telling you, my brother was, I think his job was a sonar tech on a nuclear sub.
There you go.
And I used to always just, he'd get so mad at me because I'd go, Navy? What do we need a Navy for?
Right.
We got planes and we got the Army and the Marines. We don't need the Navy. He would get so furious.
Right.
And he would go into all these about, we're the fifth most powerful country working on that submarine. And I'm like, you're hiding underwater, man.
Right.
You know.
It's funny how the services are set up. I'm going to be wrong about this, but it works out this way, even if I'm wrong about the designation. The Navy has more planes than the Air Force. The Army or the Marine Corps has more boats than the Navy. It's funny how it's set up that way. It's that so we pick and play with each other, and of course there's a lot of ribbon.
I never saw a boat.
Right. There's a lot of ribbon though within the services and like different things. Like they call the Navy guy, a lot of the Army guys call the Navy guys puddle jumpers, and then of course, you know, everybody has a little pet name for different ones. But when it gets right down to it, and you're all thrown in the mix together, it all comes together. And another thing that I enjoyed today is the friendships that you make in those situations last a lifetime. And you always have a support network because there's always somebody there that understands what you're talking about. And I know that probably don't make sense to a lot of people, but yeah.
What I'm always amazed at is I can meet somebody, like if I would have just met you out to dinner and we both found out we were in the Army,
mm-hmm.
we're in a totally different,
right.
like a tribe that no one else right. is around us is probably involved.
There's an instant connection there.
Yeah.
And that is one unique thing about the military. The military is they call it a military family for a reason, and so no matter where we come from, all walks of life, we come from all demographics, we come from everywhere. We're just a big mix, and we're somehow or another we all work together, and it's evidently worked out pretty good because last I heard, America's pretty strong.
Oh yeah, ain't no doubt, man. Well, any last words?
Always try to put a smile on somebody's face every day, because the only thing you're going to leave here is the mark that you made while you were here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's so important, because that smile could affect the whole outcome of you don't know what, but it could do it. And hopefully it'll become contagious. And don't be afraid to take a stand. If you're a man, I mean, pick your battles. But I think
that's the key, is pick your battles.
Pick your battles. I mean, don't fight a battle just for the sake of fighting a battle, you know. But if you feel strongly about it, you need to at least stand up. You know what I'm saying? You don't need screaming and hollering. Maybe just a firm hand, you know, just to say, okay, calm down or whatever. But and support, you know, support your family, support your fellow Americans, support your neighbors and your coworkers and those people.
Well, you know, one of the lessons from the Army, and we're close, you probably have something to say, is what we learned in the infantry that was beat into us at the 101st is if you're gonna fight, you never fight fair. So when I think, when I hear, you know, like, you know, people, you know, politically and stuff like that, where they're talking about our stupid stuff people get in an argument with on Facebook.
Right.
The reason I don't get involved in 99% of that,
right,
is because I know if I start down that road, I'm not going to fight fair.
Right.
Because to me, that's stupid.
Well, another thing is, a man, I don't fight anonymous. If I got something to say to you, or I've got a, well, you know, don't even have to go that far. Really, if I just have a disagreement, men should be able to settle that.
That's right.
And walk away and still be able to talk to each other the next day.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? You should be able to address your disagreements.
I still like you, and you voted for Obama and Hillary.
No, yeah. Yeah. Okay. We're not that far south. We fight battles as men, and I know this is about men, but as trappers, I mean, we're up against it too, you know, with the different organizations, and they don't fight fair at all. But a man does fight. He does fight fair in his life with when it comes to disagreements and those kind of things. And I mean, sometimes you have sometimes you have to fight fire with fire, and we get passionate about things. But don't ever let that get in the way of who you are.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the key, is as you get older, you quit playing around with the stupid stuff. And then when you see something that you really need to stand on, you stand on
it. That's right. You stand on it. That's right. And don't lose that. Don't let the squeaky wheels out there. Don't let the bright colored, shiny, scream a lot. Don't let them cast a cloud over you. You know what I'm saying? You got to realize, I mean, they're 1%.
Mm-hmm.
We're 99%.
Mm-hmm.
We have a say.
Yeah.
And you don't have to take that kind of business. You know what I mean? You don't have to. You don't. And I just don't. You know, I don't. I'm not ugly, or I don't get irate or any of that thing. But I use facts, the truth, right? And
you're probably not afraid to say no.
And that's right. And I say it like I feel it, you know. And if they don't like it, because they're going to scream all kinds of stuff at me, I could care less. You know what I'm saying? And that's another thing. Learn to let stuff roll off of you. You know what I mean? Because in the end of the day, you could spend that time being angry. There ain't no telling what you could accomplish.
That's right. You could get a patent in court.
That's right. I could build a bunch of courts. That's right. And one day, I might even get to go fishing with them.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, while we're on this, I got the opportunity to take Clint and Cindy fishing, and we just had an awesome time. We had a great time on the water, and that's the place where you find out real fast if you can get along with somebody, because you're confined to 20 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And
the smoking
sun. You can't just say, the heck with this, and walk off. Especially had a great time.
40 miles out, I didn't even know which way was back.
Right. Yeah, you could be speaking Portuguese before it's over with. Yeah. So, yeah. But we had a great time, and I got to spend time with another man, and I appreciated it. I really did. I pretty much what I thought was what I saw.
Okay. So.
which is good. That's a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I try not to. I mean, to me, it's just easier to be me.
Right.
And that's just, I don't have to worry about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the key. You know, you don't have to be pretentious. You are who you are. You've done what you did, and you do what you do. And at the end of the day, that's who you are. You know what I'm saying? And I don't have any trouble sleeping at night, because I feel like at the end of every day, I've accomplished something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been decent to people. I've given where I can, and I've done well, or done the best I can at whatever it is I do.
Good deal. We'll close on that, man. I appreciate it.
All right. I appreciate it.